The next case is 96-2 Magnolia Thomas versus Gregory J. Freeman. Mr. Jaffe.
He doesn't do anything about it. It's just sort of sitting around. It's sort of like a nuisance that he keeps being irritated with. And that concerns me because it doesn't look like the plaintiff's lawyer really cared about the case.
If Your Honor, please, I would hope that all plaintiff's lawyers and all lawyers care about their case.
Well, from the activity I read about it.
It developed later that the defendant was out of the state from January 92 through February 93. Whether plaintiff's attorney knew this at the time or not, I don't know. And my concern runs to, you need and recognize the need for some type of an orderly procedure within the courts. And 4E provides for that procedure, which is to clean the docket, move the case out if service isn't obtained.
Well, what do we do with Judge Morgan's statement that this case was dismissed for was a dismissal with prejudice? He's the judge that dismissed it, and there's no question about why he dismissed it. Should there be? There shouldn't be.
I think there is no question why he dismissed it. That is that he dismissed it because, in fact, service wasn't obtained from a standpoint of lack of prosecution.
Mr. Jaffe, though, he does say the reason he did it was because there's no activity for 6 months.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you disagree with the judge's conclusion that he dismissed it without, I mean, that legally, that he can't dismiss it with prejudice under these?
My first argument really is we're dealing with in personam jurisdiction. Absent in personam jurisdiction, we have very limited subject matter jurisdiction, and that is limited strictly to dismissing, where in fact dismissing other than on the merits. Let me illustrate what happened here a moment more, and you'll understand fully. And maybe it's a question of how much discretion you want to give the court, if there is any discretion at all. When this claim was refiled, 6 months went by, and in January of 94, the judge sent the same notice in February 94, again dismissed. This time, dismissed for lack of prosecution, same as before. But added, other than on the merits, added without prejudice. So do you say that a court may, after 6 months, dismiss, and if the court chooses, it may dismiss with prejudice, or may dismiss without prejudice, and that the failure of the court to specify that it dismissed without prejudice means it obviously had to be with prejudice, or do you say, fellas, we got two rules involved. We have 41B, Court, which provides for dismissal other than on the merits when there is no jurisdiction of the person. We have Rule 4D, which provides for dismissal other than on the merits. And on that basis, your choice as a common pleas judge is really limited to applying those two rules in this situation. It would seem to me that everybody would benefit if it were understood that we're dealing with an impersonal problem, that the court is limited in subject matter jurisdiction, and that in fact the dismissal is other than on the merits. That brings me to the argument of 2305.19, which is the same statute. That statute, as you know, starts off action that is commenced or attempted to be commenced. And I would respectfully submit that the language attempted to be commenced is different from commenced. It has meaning in the statute. One, I think it has very plain meaning. Two, I think you've always followed the philosophy of you don't ignore words that are in the statute. And so we have a statute that provides for savings clause. That statute is invoked in this instance because the dismissal in the first instance was, I believe, other than on the merits. That being the case, the savings clause would apply, and the party has 1 year to respond. Now, the court
so, yeah, you, in order to get to where you want to go, Mr. Jaffe, and this chief asked this question, you need to ignore the statement by the trial court. You know, you say, I think it was not on the merits, and yet the trial court used that magic language. Are you saying that the court, that's a void act by the court? I mean, what are you going to do?
I think one way of looking at it is to say that it is a void act. I myself look at it and say, because you have limited jurisdiction and your order reads lack of prosecution, but we know it's really a lack of service, you're limited to a dismissal of the non-merits. And I think all judges should understand that. I think everybody would be better off if they all did.
That would require a change in the rule, wouldn't it?
No, I don't think it would. Go ahead.
I wonder, why don't you think it would? It seems to me the rule it at least gives the trial court the discretion to do what the trial judge did here.
I think the rule gives some discretion to the trial court. I don't think it gives discretion where it is any personal problem. If the court don't have jurisdiction of the person to begin with, how can I act in that case other than to dismiss under Rule 4E or 41B4 other than on the merits? Your rules provide that I, as a plaintiff, let's say claims attorney, may do nothing in connection with this case other than try to get service. I can't go forward. I can't do any discovery. There's nobody on the other side. And the court itself, I think, is equally limited. And that limitation applies to 4E and to 41B4.
What does the court do if the plaintiff's lawyer has made no efforts to locate the defendant upon whom service is attempted? I mean, how does the court know that? They have to do the show cause proceeding that we had here? Or?
I don't know. In this instance, the court, as you know, did give notice, did not indicate which rule, and I think an attorney could reasonably expect that it would be under either 4E or 41B4. From the court's standpoint, the important thing is to move the case, and in this instance, to move it off the docket. If, in fact, somebody doesn't come back and try to refile, that case is done. If, on the other hand, they are able to come back and refile within the saving statute, fine, they get another shot. That's what the saving statute provides. I'm now in my 10.5 minutes. I will stop at this point for the remainder.
Thank you, Mr. Jaffe. Ms. Singer.
Plaintiff's motion to vacate the February 11th, 1994 entry?
Right.
Absolutely. And
explain that. Well, that's very... I mean, what you just said, I would accept, and we probably wouldn't be here today, but I think that that act of the
just
court really confuses things.
I agree.
And
I have no explanation why 5.5 years after an incident subject of the lawsuit, and 5 months practically after a final dismissal, the trial court took this unusual step to vacate. However, I think that one then has to look at what Judge Morgan did even subsequent to that motion to vacate. He reviewed everything he had done in this case and granted summary judgment in favor of the defendant. The argument maybe that his mistake he sees is the mistake of letting it be reinstated. I mean, I guess he has maybe seen that that was his mistake.
Except for, at least for purposes of argument, that plaintiff's counsel was not very diligent, obviously should have been more aggressive, according to the line of the argument. How does that, a lack of due diligence, negate 41b-4? Because until there's service, there's no jurisdiction. And B-4 specifically says that it's not on the merits if it's lack of jurisdiction.
First of all, I want to say that I don't think the argument for 4E is
4E
to be raised on appeal only. However, the rest of...
You said 4E. You mean B-4?
I might say E. I'm sorry.
No. 41B-4.
I'm sorry. I misheard you. Because language in 41C3 that says that failure to prosecute is a dismissal with prejudice on the merits. And I think that issue comes into play because of the notice. On June 29, 1992, the trial court sent out a notice indicating that there would be dismissal within 7 days unless counsel could show good cause why it should not be. That dismissal was not made until July 14, 1992, and in fact was not journalized until August 19, 1992. So we have almost 2 months in which time counsel could have and was on notice that maybe he should have done something and didn't. That
falls
within a failure to prosecute a case.
If counsel had, let me interrupt you, if counsel had responded to that notice from the court, I've been trying to find the defendant, but I can't find him. We want to get service on, we haven't been able to, but we've been diligent, we've had an investigator, and we can't find the defendant. Would B4 then apply? Thank you, Ms. Singer. Mr. Jaffe, you saved a little over 4 minutes of your time.
If you accept the defendant's argument 41, 40, and 40 means. If you give the common pleas judge unbridled discretion to decide that one is the entitled to dismiss for lack of prosecution, and I will dismiss with prejudice, and in the other instance, I will dismiss without prejudice, I think there's something wrong with that.
Except there's two different scenarios. I could envision the difference that a trial court sees, you know, inactivity, lack of a lack of effort, so to speak, which would differ from the scenario where a defendant is not amenable to jurisdiction in the state, and you know, so that'd be a 41B, which would tend to be raised by, not by the court, but by a defending party, that there's
Except it would be difficult for the defending party to come in because there had been no service.
Well, no, they make an appearance without, just to challenge the jurisdiction, I suppose.
I guess what I'm saying is, if we're truly dealing with in personam jurisdiction, the court of common pleas never gets to the merits, because it has no jurisdiction to do that. That's essentially how it come out. I think both of these rules have meaning. I think both of these rules provide a great advantage to the court, and that is it lets them keep their docket clean. But by the same token, I think that where the court is limited in its jurisdiction, it is, and it is in this instance, then I believe the dismissal cannot be other than on the merits.
Well, how long would this case pend? In your view, how long would this case pend? I mean, the trial court here says to plaintiff's counsel, you know, you're in trouble, let me know why there's no service here. And I think your argument seems to be that's all right. There's no jurisdiction, personal jurisdiction. But the plaintiff's lawyer has no obligation to do it or tell the court why he or she's not doing anything?
I think the plaintiff's attorney has an obligation to act, but I think also the plaintiff's attorney is entitled to rely on 41.4 and 40. I'd like to take a moment to discuss the saving statute, because as I've said, the language was attempted to commence. It's clear that there was an attempt to commence here. It would seem to me that where the dismissal is other than on merits, then the saving statute would apply. The old cases that you had basically would not have permitted the statute to apply because there was some kind of theory that service was not obtained within a year, that the commencement of a case never occurred. In effect, it's almost like the self-destruction theory, and the case never having been filed, the saving statute would not apply. In this instance, because the dismissal is within the 6-month period, and it is, I believe, and can only be other than on the merits, the saving statute would apply, and clearly the refiling was within the period of time.
If you have the scenario, the two questions. If you have a situation where there were some attempts and no service was made for whatever period of reason, isn't there a clause in the rule that allows you to come into court and show good cause or good faith attempt to give the court the ability to extend the period?
I think there would be, and I guess I need to point out that in this instance we had a defendant that was out of state for a substantial period.
So in those cases where it would be obvious, or it should be obvious, that they should be dismissed without prejudice, there already is a provision in the rule to give some extension. So basically all the other things could fall under lack of due diligence.
Rule 6 would permit requesting an extension.
Okay.
However,
Then the safety guard, I think you have, if you're not, is that if an attorney is not that diligent and the judge dismisses it without prejudice or failure to prosecute, and he has the 1-year saving statute, the second time he comes in and the second time he screws up, he's out for good.
He may very well be out for good.
Because there's no second saving clause.
That is correct.
There is ultimately an end to.
Oh, yes. I mean, it does not go on indefinitely. No question on that. All things come to an end, including, I think, court case. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chaffee. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.